Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
James Whitey Bulger will be arraigned in a Boston District Court later today. The top 10 most wanted fugitive for 16 years or so is going to be charged for having an alleged role in 19 murders. He's 81 years old now. He was captured in Santa Monica, California last month. He's accused of carrying out crimes while he was simultaneously acting as an FBI informant. And in fact, he's accused of using his role as an FBI informant to cover up and keep the FBI off his case. From Boston, we're again joined by Boston Globe columnist Kevin Cullen. Kevin followed Bulger, not literally, but in the news, for 30 years and was part of the team of reporters that actually exposed Bulger as an FBI informant. Good morning.
Good morning, Celeste.
You know, I'm wondering, Kevin, what it was like after all these years when you first saw them bring Whitey Bulger into the courtroom after his capture. What was that like for you?
He looked better than I thought he would. I mean, for 81, I noticed so quickly, you know, there were suggestions that he might have a touch of dementia or Alzheimer's or be infirm. But he walked into a crowded courtroom. There might have been 100 people in the courtroom. And within two or three steps into that courtroom in leg irons, he spotted his brother Billy, who used to be the most powerful politician in Massachusetts. He spotted him in the second row of the courtroom, which told me Whitey may be many things, but he still has his fastball.
You know, Kevin, a lot of things are surprising people now that Whitey Bulger is in custody. One of the things that seems to have surprised a lot of people is that he still had his girlfriend with him. Many people thought that there were even predictions or experts saying that he wouldn't have been able to afford to have her with him for that long, someone who made him vulnerable, and that he might have killed her, but she was still with him.
Yeah, that frankly did not surprise me because Whitey was, he had a number of girlfriends, but, you know, for most of his adult life, he was with Teresa Stanley. I mean, most people referred to her as his common-law wife. In fact, she went on the run with him to begin with, but she decided very soon into it that she did not want to stay in that life. And so he dropped her off not too far from my house, where I'm sitting right now, in Hingham, which is on the south shore of Massachusetts. And then he drove up to it's called Malibu Beach in Boston, but you wouldn't think of it as the other Malibu. But he picked up Kathy Grigg at Malibu Beach, just sort of down by the heels, inner city beach in Dorchester. And then 16 years later, they're captured not too far from the real Malibu Beach. But no, he's a guy that never liked to be alone. He did not like, even when he was in prison, he was pretty sociable. He always had a big circle of friends.
So what do you think, as this trial goes forward, is it going to break down this legend that is built up around Whitey Bulger? I mean, this is a man who, at least as far as murdering crime bosses go, has been a legend in his own time, played by Jack Nicholson. His character was inspired by Whitey Bulger. Endless crime novels based on the life of Whitey Bulger. I mean, well, what happens now?
Today is a good start, Celeste, because the previous three court appearances here in U.S. District Court in Boston have all been very procedural, all been very antiseptic, all been very pedestrian. Today we get down to brass tacks. There will be a list of 19 murders which Whitey Bulger is charged as either committing himself or having others commit. And that's one thing about Bulger. I think there was a touch of sociopathic in him. He committed a lot of murders. I remember Kevin Weeks, who was one of his lieutenants and ended up becoming a government witness. Kevin would often describe that after Whitey Bulger killed somebody, he would, like, go and take a nap. I mean, that's how he regarded it. It was sort of like part of the day job. And, you know, you'd punch in, you'd punch out, and after you killed somebody, I'm tired, I got to go take a nap. So, I mean, this is the kind of, and this will come out today, at least, at the very least, it's important for the victims' families to hear these names, because the treatment Bulger's been getting just since his arrest, the way he's been whisked around, he was flown into court the other day on a Coast Guard helicopter that cost thousands and thousands of dollars. And then sort of the insult to injury, I remember Steve Davis, whose sister Debbie was murdered by Whitey. He used his own hands to strangle her while Stevie Flemmy watched. Stevie Flemmy was Whitey's partner in crime. Debbie Davis was a girlfriend of his. He started a relationship with her when she was 17 years old, and at 26, he tired of her. There was a suggestion she might go to another guy, a younger guy. So Whitey said, well, we can't have that, and he strangled her. Steve Davis was waiting to get into the court the other day, and they allowed Whitey Bulger's two brothers, Billy Bulger, the former politician, Jackie Bulger, former court officer, they were allowed in, and the family was held back by court officers. So the victim, it was really hard for them. And Steve blew up. Steve's a very emotional guy. He was thrown out of the court years ago for having emotional outbursts. And we were all trying to calm him down and said, Steve, take it easy. But you could, the families of these victims are sort of sick of the attention and the sort of special treatment and the preferential treatment that Whitey Bulger and his family have been getting. So today would be important for them to have just to have those names read out in court. These are his victims. This guy wasn't a character of a movie. He was somebody who murdered families, somebody who murdered individuals.
Well, going to that emotion, Kevin Cullen, I mean, there's been a lot of movies that have come out about South Boston, about Charlestown in the last couple of years. I'm thinking of a line from The Town where that federal detective says to Ben Affleck, it is my mission to see to it that you die in a federal prison. How many people in law enforcement in Boston, do you think, have a speech like that running through their mind as they see this guy?
I did a column the other day about them. I called them. There was a long line of honest cops that really went after this guy. And, I mean, Tom Foley, a state police commander, I think, of at the top of that. But this is true. When I wrote my column like this, I was sitting in court looking at the back of Whitey Bulger's head, and I was thinking of Jack O'Donovan, Pat Greeny. I mean, these are two state cops, honest guys who spent a lot of their career, Jack O'Donovan, who was a commander in the case, of exposing this. He knew that these guys were protected by the FBI. Pat Greeny is more of a in-the-field kind of commander, trying to take Bulger down. And neither one of them could be there to watch this, to bask in this. I mean, Pat Greeny died 7 weeks ago. He was only 63, and it was a sudden death, and he was just a tremendous guy. And Jack O'Donovan is in a VA hospital not far from Boston suffering from Alzheimer's. So it's sad and poignant, but there's a lot of honest cops who helped to bring this guy down.
And honest reporters like Kevin Cullen, a columnist with the Boston Globe. We're talking with Kevin Cullen about James Whitey Bulger, obviously the top 10 most wanted fugitive who was captured in Santa Monica, California last month. He will be arraigned today in a Boston district court. Still with us, a Boston Globe columnist, Kevin Cullen. Kevin followed Whitey Bulger for 30 years and was part of the team of reporters that exposed Bulger as an FBI informant back in the days when he was running a gang there in Boston. Kevin, I wanted to kind of talk about some of the procedures going forward in the case, because one thing that many people have spoken out about or complained about is that Whitey Bulger's actually using a public defender, a taxpayer-funded lawyer at this point. Why?
Well, I mean, The reality is any money he has, the government has a lien on it. What is, I think, driving people more crazy? I think most people get their head around that. If you're a gangster and they catch you and they find that you have 800 grand in the wall of your house, they're going to take it. Yeah. And you're not going to be able to use that for your defense. But I think a lot of people here in Boston, what drives them crazy is that the whole Bulger family has been on the public payroll, except for Whitey. Actually, Whitey, when he first got out of prison in the 60s, did have a no-show job that his brother got him at a courthouse. He was supposedly a custodian. But Billy Bulger, in his case, he receives a pension upward of $200,000 a year, because after he was the president of the Senate here in Massachusetts, he became the president of the University of Massachusetts. He has one of the highest pensions in the state. So there's a belief, why doesn't Billy Bulger or the Bulger family pay for this defense?
Yeah.
The problem is there's no legal obligation to do this. There might be a moral obligation, but morality and the Bulgers in this case have never been used in the same sentence.
So, Kevin, before we go, is there any link? You referred to the folklore and this extraordinary emotion surrounding this case in Boston. Any link between this case and the crazy Casey Anthony business that came to a climax yesterday?
Joe, I'd say the only link here is that people here who would, in a million years would not believe Whitey could get off would look at what happened in Florida and say, anybody can get off anything. So,
really?
But, yeah, I mean, I think that's the only thing. I mean, that's what I heard people talking about, saying, everybody think it's a slam dunk with Whitey. I personally, there's no way Whitey Bulger's walking out of a as I said, we better start calling him Orangey because he's going to be in that jumpsuit the rest of his life.
But it is interesting how inside the courtroom it's a different world than the sort of whirl outside.
Yeah, and the other weird thing, and my friends on the TV and business are just so frustrated because you can't get cameras in there. You can't get TV cameras in there. You can't get still cameras in there. So it's this weird. Now the public sees Whitey drawn by this very lovely older lady that I've known for. She's been covering the mob trials as long as I have, and she sits there and draws him in these lovely pastels. And you know, this is the image that the public will see. Will either be Whitey jumping out of cars going into the court or out of a helicopter. I don't think that'll ever happen then. But it's just pictures of him being drawn by an artist, and it is a weird sort of there's a disconnect because you don't see the images of him in the courtroom, and that's so it's even more important that people like myself and print and our friends in radio can convey this more because we think of this as a television age, but it isn't in federal courts.
Although we have for 16 years being seeing retouched photos and drawings of Whitey Bulger as.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretending that he's aged, so maybe it went away. We're kind of used to it. Kevin Collin is a Boston Globe columnist, followed Whitey Bulger for 30 years. James Whitey Bulger will be arraigned in a Boston District Court later today for his alleged role in 19 murders. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thanks, Celeste.